Relationship Sanity: Creating and Maintaining Healthy Relationships. Chapter 1: Not Wanting What We Think We Want. I should have known that something was badly wrong when Mason pulled out Henry Miller's The Rosy Crucifixion, 1,462 pages, on our honeymoon. At some unconscious level, the couple living in your relationship finds safety in knowing what they can expect from one another and what not to ask for. It's kind of like an old joke cultural theorist Slavoj Žižek likes to tell about communist Poland. Note 1. A customer enters a store. Customer, do you have any butter? Clerk, no, we're the store that doesn't have any toilet paper. The store across the street is the one that doesn't have any butter. Gina and Mason knew they didn't have to worry that either would ask the other for closeness and sharing, an idea that scared the daylights out of them. This made it easy for Gina to blame their disappointing honeymoon on Mason's busyness with Henry Miller, with the added value of giving her an out for dealing with her anxiety about whether or not she was sexually desirable. This configuring of their marriage may seem insane, but remaining blind to their song and dance routine enabled Gina and Mason to keep themselves blissfully unaware of their fear of intimacy. I spent years pretending I was okay with a sexless relationship, which let me off the hook from confronting Mason about it. But deciding to get married changed something for me, and I decided I was going to ask for it on our honeymoon. Well, Mason didn't even try to pretend he wanted me more than he wanted Henry Miller. After 6 years together, I was finally forced to swallow the hard truth that he didn't want to be close to me that way. If I wanted sex, I'd have to go elsewhere, and well, that's what I ended up doing. Still, it was a real shame. All those trips to Victoria's Secret, having some naughty fun, buying naughty, nighty things. Things I ended up wearing to monitor Mason's progress through Rosy Crucifixion. If I'm honest, though, I knew a long time ago that Mason just wasn't a very romantic guy. Not the way everybody dreams of, I guess. So where did I get the idea that he loved me, or that I wanted him to love me? This wasn't the first time this had happened to Gina. I finally admitted to myself that her honeymoon was actually a replay of what happened with every boyfriend I'd had since high school. Then I heard about ear relationship, about people who were really afraid of letting anyone get too close, no matter how attracted to the other person they were. So I finally started wondering, am I doing this on purpose? For Gina, the upside of hitting the wall on their honeymoon was that it forced her to admit that the same old wasn't working anymore, which is, or can be, the jumping-off place for relationship sanity. So, while Mason wasn't especially interested in changing their status quo, Gina's investment in their song and dance routine drained away pretty quickly. In many cases, however, a couple becomes able to break through that denial together and admits that something is wrong, and they want to fix it. In such cases, the couple, 1, recognize their mutual isolation, 2, decides together that they want to recover what excited them about each other when they first met, 3, breaks free from the straitjacket of their song and dance routine, 4, faces and works through the buried feelings and fears that had overwhelmed their ability to be there for one another. Often, opening the door to buried anxiety can be harrowing, and deciding to do so doesn't guarantee a restored relationship. But the agreement to go through it together, no matter what, gives the couple a better shot at the outcome they're hoping for. Exercise. Joint Compassion Meditation, Note 2. Learning to observe thoughts and feelings. In this brief section, we outline some basic moves for establishing a practice which you, as partners in a building alliance, can create and then return to at certain suggested key points, and or any time that the work in this book becomes anxiety-provoking and overwhelming. We suggest putting a sticky note on this page because we'll ask users to return to this exercise a few times in the course of this book. Observing our thoughts and feelings non-judgmentally as spectators isn't something many of us practice, despite evidence of the value of doing so. But cultivating this practice, sometimes known as mindfulness, and using it in stressful situations, helps us focus on essential information needed to make better choices, including choices about how to navigate relationships. At times, you and your partner may find it necessary to do the exercise in separate rooms, or even at separate times. Start in a comfortable, seated position with your feet flat on the floor, your head slightly tilted down, and your eyes partially open, focusing on a spot a few feet in front of you. Avoid falling asleep. Sit quietly, giving attention to the breath, while observing without judgment the stream of thoughts passing through your mind. Then return your attention to the breath. Since this is not a competition or contest, even against yourself, there is no good, bad, or right, wrong. It's simply a process for learning about what your mind does and becoming able to step back from it. Now, together and using a timer, spend 3 to 5 minutes sitting quietly and looking into one another's eyes. You may find the following questions useful. How did it feel to observe your thoughts and emotions without reacting to them? What suggestions or reflections can you offer one another about observing thoughts without reacting to them? Sharing your experience, speaking and listening, without interruption, use compassionate listening. As you listen, with each inhalation, imagine compassion is flowing into you, from the world, from you to yourself. As you exhale, imagine that compassion is flowing from you into your partner. You may do this whenever listening, and especially throughout the exercises in the following chapters.